get the news on our shows and other happenings by following us on Twitter. Find us at VoiceAmericaTRN or Twitter.com/VoiceAmericaTRN. The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit VoiceAmericaVariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Have healing work to do on race and culture topics. We have those questions that seem to be unaskable in today's climate. Now, we have a forum where we can ask experts, listen, and share. Welcome to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. Get ready to engage and add your voice to racial healing in the next hour. Let's start right now. Here's Sharon E. Davis.
Oh, welcome to our show again today. I'm delighted that you took time to join us. We have another great show today, and it's a topic that we don't hear about very often, if ever. And this particular topic will probably touch not only your heart, but just the depths of your being, if not soul. You know that every day these racial tensions grow, but it's not our fault. And there are so many parts and pieces of this that we have to learn in order to get better together. Well, the title of our show today is Incarceration, the Child's Point of View. Yes, from the child's point of view, children of the incarcerated seem to be invisible in this continuing national tragedy of mass incarceration. There are over 2.7 million directly affected, and the number is growing. The stigma is placed on these little hearts and minds. What do caretakers, teachers, family members say or do? This is not specific to one race or ethnicity. However, the face of the impacted is too often felt in black and brown. What are these, no, our children feeling that impact their futures? Are we forcing them to pay a debt to society that they had nothing to do with? Think these, no, our children don't love and miss their parents? Or their parents not love them? Well, we've got to think again. Sesame Street's workshop, Sesame Workshop, has stepped into this emotionally charged arena with a toolkit to help with the secret hurt and pain. Oh, please welcome Dr. Jeanette Betancourt, who is Sesame Workshop Senior Vice President of Outreach and Education, and Dr. Kirk Harris, who's a professor at the University of Wisconsin. He's also a lawyer and a Sesame Street and Workshop advisor. Now, both of them are going to help us gain a new literacy and skill to see these, our children, and parents with new eyes. Well, Dr. Betancourt and Dr. Harris, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon. We greatly appreciate having the opportunity to be here.
Well, I'm so thankful for you all to be here because of your skills and backgrounds and also the commitment that you have. And along these lines, maybe we could start with Dr. Betancourt. Why do you do this work? Why is this important to you?
This is really part of our mission. We are always looking for children here in the United States and around the world where their greatest needs are and where such hard topics where resources are not available that we use this wonderful brand of Sesame Street as a way to connect and respond to very difficult questions. And incarceration was one of those topics that we found so little happening and resources available.
Well, that certainly does hit the spot that way. Is there anything you personally are committed to or why you do this besides your mission? you know?
Well, you know, it's not only personal, but it's within the context of the needs of children. And really the mission of Sesame Workshop is always to, again, address those needs, to help children thrive and develop. And personally, it is because I always want to establish a global approach in terms of setting a very good and positive foundation as early as possible for all children to thrive, because so much happens in these early years.
Oh, wow. That certainly is more true than what we can ever believe to be. And how about you, Dr. Harris? Why do you do this work?
Well, Sharon, let me just say, and first of all, let me just thank Jeanette for the opportunity to be an advisor for Sesame Street Workshop, because I think they do fabulous work, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be engaged and connected to advance that work. And I do this work. I was raised without my father in my life, and one of the things that I've recognized as a result of the work that I'm presently doing in places like Chicago and have done nationally for over the last 15 years or more is the recognition that parents are an essential component in the lives of their children. And it's particularly true where, unfortunately, in our society, despite the claims that we make about the importance of parents, sometimes fathers don't get as much attention and support as they need in terms of effectively engaging with their children. And this issue of incarceration, which, by the way, is not just an issue that impacts men, it's also increasingly women are becoming increasingly subject to incarcerating at actually higher rates in terms of the number of, and the growth of incarceration. Now, women are being impacted. But with that said, that leaves 2 million children without their parents. And that's a huge, that has huge implications for us as a society. It has huge implications for the impacts that that has on the children and their own development. And it has a huge impact on what we say we want to do in terms of strengthening families and ensuring that kids grow up to be the best they can be. So I'm in this work in large measure in the recognition that all family members have to play a significant role in the development of children, and that we need to also recognize that fathers who have been really, I would argue, a missing element in the thrust around this issue, that they need to play a really important role in that as well.
Oh, thank you so much, both of you. And, you know, both of you kind of talked about just the numbers of children, and I mentioned it also in the introduction that there are over 2.7 million and counting. And Dr. Betancourt, is this just those who are incarcerated, or is that number maybe a lot more than what we think? Does it include parolees or who?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. So we're speaking really about 2.7 million children. And as Kurt indicated, really our future. These are children who are our future. Are experiencing the incarceration of a parent either in a jail or a prison. But we're not accounting for all those children who are impacted, who are family members are in the judicial system. So as you indicated, they may be in a transition, or they may be on parole, or they may be just going into the system. So we are speaking about much larger number of children. And as Kirk indicated, it's really how we're looking at not the issue of the incarceration or the cause of the incarceration for the parent, but rather the consequences of that around the family, and particularly for the caregivers who are taking care of these children, as well as the children themselves.
Well, you know, both of you have said so much already, and what struck me is that it's not talking about if it's the parent's fault and what they did, but the consequences that are really staring us in our face, and right. Maybe the stigma. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to that a little bit, of these little hearts and minds and the stigma?
Well, let Jeanette go first, and I wanted to make some specific comments on that.
Okay,
from the perspective
Jeanette.
Of,
Absolutely. Thank you, Kirk. And again, we also, I think Kirk and I have a love fest because we were so happy to have him as our one of our advisors, because exactly the same kind of approach that he's describing about the family context is so important. But you're right. What was brought up so significant in our work, not only from our advisors, but going out actually to families experiencing this challenge in their lives, was this idea of the tremendous stigma, not only for the family, for the child themselves, and even for the incarcerated parent, and how to deal with that. And the consequences of that is not speaking about what actually has happened to the parent. In fact, many times there was this idea that the parent may have been deployed, or the parent is going to college, or has a medical problem, or a life-threatening illness, or is in college. So the not being truthful about what actually occurred. The other area is that if, and part of that, not speaking about it openly within the realm of the family, is also for fear that if a child or any caregiver speaks about it beyond their family structure, then they're stigmatized. Then there is suddenly this idea also that they did something wrong. Or in the part of children, many times it's this idea that they may also be going down the same track as the parent who is incarcerated. We know that's not true.
Well, let me make sure I understand, because a child may say that the parent has been deployed, or they're not there in the home or around a code or encoding to avoid the actual truth or trauma, or say that they're in college. Did I get that right?
Well, I think it's more what's being told by the caregivers or the the adults in the children's lives who are taking care of these children. They are not being truthful and really not letting the child know what actually happened. Now, you may think, okay, so for young children, you don't want to say that. But the thing is, what happens is these children grow up, and they often find out later and very quickly what actually happened. And they feel that they've been lied to, or that the consequence of not speaking about it actually adds more shame to them. And I know, Kirk, you shared much of this with us as well.
I would really like for you, Kirk, to participate. We're going to go on break in about 30 seconds.
Okay.
And I really want to hear your full comments uninterrupted, because I know that you have a lot of information as well. And so I'm just going to summarize just quickly here that the children of the incarcerated really are innocent, but they may feel guilty at times of something, and they may not even know it, and that the caretakers may be trying to protect them at times by not telling them exactly where their parents are. Well, we're going to be right back with Kirk Harris's comments on this subject.
Talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a single parent trying to create the balance between home life and work life? You may be running a successful business, but how are your relationships with your family and children? If you're one of the thousands of people trying to juggle it all, tune in to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood, hosted by Chris Efesiou. Chris is the portrait of the success story. Coming to the U.S. with no language skills, founding and growing several businesses while raising his daughter from age 7 to adulthood as a single dad. Listen every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
Come back to your senses. Imagine a radio show that will help you recover your common sense. Host Leah Brenda Smith is a health and wellness specialist who will explain techniques designed to help you recover from the stress of your life. It's all about how you respond to your thoughts. A little bit of self-awareness can go a long way in helping you to relax and enjoy your life. Tune in to Come Back to Your Senses Radio, live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. We know you have something to say, so participate in today's discussion by calling 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send us an email to Sharon at safeplaceonrace.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to our show. Our guests today are Dr. Jeanette Betancourt, who is a Senior Vice President of Outreach and Educational Practices at Sesame Street Sesame Workshop, and also Dr. Kirk E. Harris, who's professor at the School of Architecture and Urban Planning at the University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee, and both of them have resumes and bios that we don't have time to tell all the details, but you can find that out on our website or go to Voice America and read more about them. And before we went on break, we were talking about your comments, Dr. Betancourt, about the stigma. And thanks so much for rounding that out for us. And I'd like to ask Dr. Harris, what are your comments about this stigma? And what happens to these beautiful, wonderful children?
Yeah, well, let's talk about the context for that. If you think about this, right, you've got 4.7 million adult men and women who are in probation or parole, and you've got 6.7 million men and women in federal, state, or local institutions. So if you think about that, you've got in excess of 11 million men and women in prisons, more than half of which are actually parents. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge number. And if you think about that in the context of how you communicate with children, that becomes critically important. So if you're telling a child essentially that their parent is sick or they're deployed or they're in college, what that essentially does is in my mind, creates a barrier, right? You certainly have to recognize the developmental stage that the child is in and how you introduce this idea to them. But the fact is that the way that you disconnect, that's a way of disconnecting the child from the parent by not telling the truth, because then you don't want to expose the child to the parent because they may find out the truth, but you told them something contrary.
So
that creates, that in some ways that creates a barrier to really healthy, positive communications between the child and the parent, which I think is really important. In our experience, as you know, I'm a senior advisor for a program for fathers, families, and healthy communities. Over mm-hmm. half of the fathers in our programs were incarcerated at one point. And I can tell you that the pain of them not connecting to their children over the course of that time is very significant. So it's not only the pain for the child, right? It's also the pain for the parents themselves. And also I have to say that, the other piece of that is that if you think about that pain and you think about what's going to happen with the parents once they come out of that institution, remember that these parents are going to have to get some sort of support as they engage with their children. And that can't happen after they've been incarcerated for many years. They have to have that support as a transition, as a kind of a natural part of their development and connection with the child. And by the way, the literature says that if parents who are connected in healthy ways who are moving from incarceration to reentry, that their likelihood of recidivism is going to decline, because they don't want to repeat that experience because of the challenge it might present for their connectivity to their children. And that's both for fathers and mothers. And so
that's a really important point about what additional things happen that disconnect a child from their parent as they know it. Well, that's just really, we could talk about this, as you know, for a whole show, just this one element alone. And, you know, in this regard, though, this particular effort that you're involved in and heading up, Dr. Betancourt, Jeanette, can you tell us a little bit about this? What is it, and what are you doing with it?
Well, let me tell you really the start of this. This really has built around our entire work around resiliency, and actually started with our military families work, because we found that with military families, there were not a lot of resources that helped them transition in very specific periods, such as deployment, when a parent returns injured. Then as we started to proceed, we started to find around again, what are sort of these critical challenges targeting young children? And incarceration was another of those tremendous challenges, where once again there weren't resources. And going back to why many parents or caregivers were not necessarily talking about this openly, we found based on our initial research that one of the reasons was because they actually did not have the language, the developmentally appropriate language on how to describe what was happening. So what we did, and again, all these resources are available digitally on sesamestreet.org/incarceration, but we actually took many of the questions that children would ask. Like, for example, when the incarceration first starts, where is my daddy or where is my mommy? And giving simple answers such as, you know, they are in prison or for a while, and it's because a grown-up or your mom or dad has broken a rule that's called a law. And again, reassuring them that it wasn't their fault. This is not your fault, but it is something that has happened. And it may require that your parent, your father or mother may have to stay in prison for a while. So you were giving the specific language based on actual questions. And once again, I think back to what Kirk was saying, is this idea that by providing this dialogue and communication between the caregivers, the incarcerated parent, for the child, for the children, we're also establishing that connection, I believe, that all parents and caregivers want to have with their children. And again, as Kurt pointed out, if we want reentry, it's much more difficult to have a connection with your child if you haven't had that during your incarceration. It's almost impossible.
Well, in this regard to the tool, it's a toolkit that's or resources that are available. Can you tell our listening audience about that too?
Absolutely. There are resources available in English and in Spanish. And what those resources are, there's a wonderful video for children and caregivers. And that video talks about several things. One, it talks about having an incarcerated parent. It also describes what may happen during a visit to a jail or a prison. Again, never shown from the child's point of view. But it also has actual children talking to our wonderful Muppets and expressing their feelings on what it was and having an incarcerated parent, and also for them sometimes what's hard and what's easy. And what's easy is basically maintaining communication in different ways, either by phone or letters or even having an actual visit. Then in addition to that, there's a parent caregiver guide, again, describing very specific questions. There's also an app so that you can take this information on the go. All of this information is available for free on our site at sesamestreet.org/incarceration. And again, it's basically all the specific tools that you will need to share both with your child as well as yourself on how to cope with this transition.
Well, this is just remarkable in this frame, and I noticed your language here very much, that a person, your parent, may be in prison for a while, which gives kind of a frame of reference for timing a bit, and that it's not they're not gone forever, and they are still part of this world, and you know, and that seems to be, that really just got my attention. What would you add to this, Kirk?
Yeah, I think what Jeanette says is really important, because I think in the minds of children, one of the things that could be the most painful is the notion that their parent has abandoned them.
Yes.
And to the extent that even in the face of the parent being in a penal institution of some sort, the child, if we look at this from the child perspective as opposed to the adult perspective, if you look at it from the child perspective, the child would feel much better to know that my parent's gone for a while but going to be back, as opposed to that my parent is gone. And
right.
I think, and so in younger children, it's hard for them to make that distinction, right? So knowing that they have access to their parent is really important, so that they don't think that they've lost their parent forever. So I think this is, from a developmental vantage point, I think even though it might be painful and challenging for the caregivers, who, by the way, often are the parents of the mm-hmm. of the individual who's incarcerated, by the way, mm-hmm. in many instances.
Absolutely.
So and they have trouble navigating those waters too. So I think these materials and for them is also helpful, because it helps them understand that this stigma and these other things, that they don't have to assimilate these things, and that they can actually work with the child to make them feel better about a challenging circumstance. So I think that this is really important.
Well, we could talk about this for a long time too, because it begs the question, at least in my mind and heart, for these children that have to take this on. And besides the shame of it, apparently the shame of it, what does that do to them? You know, of course, shame, it's a feeling, I know, but what does that do to their long-term outlook? Dr. Betancourt, would you like to take that for a moment?
Absolutely. And another piece in these resources is the wonderful storybook that we have in my family. And it's, once again, the point of view of a young child not having their parent at a particularly family event, and the shame and the reluctance that she has as well. And it's also on our video as well. Our wonderful Muppet Alex has the same experience. So I think what I'd love to do is also look at the positive, so that mm-hmm. if you speak about it a little bit more openly and within the context of a safe group, and by that we mean those caregivers that are around you that are speaking about this more openly and helping respond to the questions. What that does, and I refer to this as sort of part of our resiliency, it builds a safe framework for a child emotionally. And mm-hmm. as Kirk indicated, there's not the sense of abandonment, but rather an understanding that something happened. Something happened in which a parent cannot be there. And that is a breaking of a law. But in that, it doesn't mean that parent actually abandoned that child. And I think for any child, having that safe base is critical. The other thing is the ongoing, as we know, all children just need continuity, and they mm-hmm. need a feeling of support emotionally, regardless of their situation. This is not mm-hmm. just specific to children of incarcerated parents. I think what we always want to frame is that what we're speaking about emotionally in terms of the social emotional support for children is really applicable to all children, again, mm-hmm. to move successfully and forward in their lives. And also what we build early on in terms of these early years is sort of our foundation on how we face challenges also in our future.
Well, this is just extraordinary. We're going to take another break, and we'll come right back with Dr. Jeanette Betancourt and Dr. Kirk Harris. We'll be right back.
News. Opinion.
Hear me.
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
Listen for MD Radio on the Voice America Variety Channel.
That's Muscular Development Radio.
Every Monday, your host, Sean Ray, will take you inside the world of bodybuilding and health and fitness. The show will feature Hall of Fame bodybuilders, trainers, judges, and the future champions of tomorrow. Plus, you'll be invited to participate in our call-in
Ask the Pros feature, and our nutritional spotlight will feature products that can help you achieve your fitness goals. MD Radio is broadcast live Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Did you ever stop to think that financial health can be a lot like physical health? The financial physician, Lou Skatigna, has helped people on the radio for nearly 15 years. And now he's part of the Voice America Variety Channel. By using medical analogies to discuss financial solutions, Lou actually makes the process easier to understand and will help you chart your own financial fitness. Tune in to The Financial Physician, live every Monday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 a.m. Pacific Time, and on demand anytime on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com. You are tuned in to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. We know you have something to say, so participate in today's discussion by calling 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send us an email to Sharon at safeplaceonrace.com. Now, back to the program.
Oh, welcome back once again. Our guests today are Dr. Jeanette Betancourt, a Senior Vice President of Sesame Street Workshop, and Dr. Kirk E. Harris, who's Professor of the University of Wisconsin and an advisor to Sesame Street and Sesame Workshop. Welcome back. Well, before we went on break, Jeanette, you were talking about resiliency and the emotional support that these children need of who have parents who are incarcerated. And Kirk, could you add some more to that as well from your perspective? What kind of emotional support is needed?
Sure. Well, first of all, I think we have to appreciate, and I think the statistic is really important. African-American children are 9 times more likely than white children to have parents who are incarcerated. Latino children are 3 times more likely to have parents incarcerated than white children. And so the point is that when given the proliferation of these issues in those respective communities, the idea that the community really has to come around that child and really serve as an asset to that child, and so that that child doesn't feel the impact of the frequency in those communities in which parents are incarcerated. And I can go into a whole other discourse, which is not the subject of this show, about why there's such a high level of frequency of incarceration within those communities.
But
that's not this show.
Right.
That's a different show. But given the respective impacts, I think what we then need to remind the communities from which those children come from is that we have to be particularly adroit at managing the concerns of children and the well-being of children given that, which means that we have to take much more of a family support approach. That is, you know, when they say, you know, the old adage, which is overused, it's a village raises a child. Well, we're going to have to really engage in that and recognize how to leverage those community and familial assets so that it really wraps around that child in the absence of their parents being present while trying to engage that parent on a continuous basis to make sure that they don't lose connection.
Well, I tell you, we do have a question from a caller from Arizona, and the question is, what opportunities are there for children of incarcerated citizens? Are there a few scholarships available, but I wonder, is there still a stigma? Who would like to take that one?
I could start, and then maybe Kirk can fill in, because I think just having the discussion that we're having, and Kirk brought an excellent point. And Sharon, you started off with another sort of very strong statement. Before your opening, you indicated this is an invisible community. And we found that. We found that these children are an invisible community that we often don't speak about. And the fact that we're having this discussion on air, the fact that we're saying that it's really not just a single family, but rather that it's a community that needs to get engaged, and that also these are our future in terms of children. Then it changes the discussion so that the issue is just not a family stigma, but rather that the issue of having a parent who's incarcerated in a societal view is not blaming the child or the caregivers. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the shift. And therefore, then if you do have support, whether it's through scholarships or programs, it changes the view of those scholarships and programs to be positive and reduces the stigma. So I think if we can accomplish to make this much more not just an individual or a set of children, but rather much broader discussion to be a community issue. And the idea that the numbers we're speaking about, it really implies that regardless whether it's a community of color or not, that we're really speaking about hitting mostly every community. Mm-hmm. And if we don't look at that in that context, then we don't push the discussion forward and reduce the stigma.
Well, you know, the stigma in terms, does this also flood over into a stigma for communities of color? Mm-hmm. You know, has that come up?
Yeah, well, let me just say this. I think it's really interesting. I think Jeanette is absolutely right that in some ways these children and their families are invisible, but they're typically invisible to the institutions in which the children typically come in contact with, whether it be the schools, mm-hmm. the community organizations, the churches. These are the places where they in some ways become invisible because people aren't aware often in those institutions that these children are navigating that life reality, right? And those are the very institutions that should be supporting and facilitating that navigation, but are not for any number of reasons. I think the other issue is that where this issue is not invisible is in the communities themselves. I can tell you in a lot of the communities from which our fathers come from, the issue of incarceration is a constant day-to-day reality. So it's not invisible in those communities, but it is invisible in those institutions in which those children from those communities navigate. Often. And that's the problem.
That's an excellent point, too, because you're absolutely right, and you brought that up for us as well. So one of the things that we are doing with these resources is actually trying to develop a distribution plan, because there's not only digital materials but actual kits, also hands-on kits of these resources. So we're working with very specific organizations in states and coalitions that are addressing and holistically, and many of the organizations that Kirk has indicated, whether it's a faith-based, whether it's a child care, a social service, family courts, and trying to get these resources in hand so mm-hmm. that there are tools to facilitate this discussion and address these needs. But Kirk is absolutely right. You need to target those organizations that are touching children and families and caregivers in a way that goes beyond and addresses this topic specifically.
Well, you know, on a very personal level, I've been very fortunate in my background and experiences that I wasn't separated from my parents, you know, growing up. I can't mm-hmm. imagine the trauma if mm-hmm. I was separated from my parents. I can't imagine that. And I'm just wondering, you know, how do these children react to that, you know? Because I'm guessing that maybe I would want to hide. I wouldn't want that to be known that somehow my parent broke a law and went away, but they still love me. What are some of the things that happen under those circumstances, Kirk?
Well, Sharon, the other part of it is horrible is when the parent is actually arrested or accosted, if you will, when the child is present, which you can only imagine how traumatic that experience is, right? So I think it is you can kind of equate this to any kind of trauma violence and other kinds of things that children see. It's very similar. And to the extent that it touches the person that's probably closest to them in their lives, the magnitude of that trauma is just increased. So I think it's a really horrendous scenario for children. Jeanette probably could speak more eloquently to the science of the implications that this has, that trauma has for children and their development, but it can very significantly impact the child's development. It can affect their mental health in terms of their levels of depression, stress, any number of things that just aren't good for children when they're seeking to reach their potential. So I think this trauma is a really important way to characterize the impact on children whose parents are incarcerated.
Would you like to add anything to that, Jeanette?
Oh, yes, and Kirk was absolutely right. It's really trauma, and from what we heard from many families and children themselves, especially older children that we spoke to, they equated it actually to grief, to death.
Mm.
And experiencing from the point, as Kirk described very often, that they actually saw their parents being arrested, and it was in their home. And then suddenly, they didn't quite understand what was happening, and suddenly this parent is gone, and there's mm-hmm. really no explanation. And mm-hmm. for them, if we consider what is so significant for young children, especially in their early years, is always to have the sense of an anchor and safety. We
right.
all may have grown up in that or not, but the thing is that for young children, what sort of emotionally and cognitively and physically helps stabilize them is this idea of consistency and a safe environment. And that safe environment is to be comfortable enough that there's an adult overseeing you. And if you suddenly see that adult being just grabbed and taken away and then mm-hmm. absolutely not have an explanation
mm-hmm.
or an explanation that, you know, a child is really uncertain about, you know, if it's going to college, how long can that happen, especially if it's a very long period of time? So many of the children that we spoke to who had this experience when very young in their preschool years, and now were older, you know, in their early elementary or later, they actually equated it to a death. It was
like a
death with no known reason as to why that death occurred. And the sense of just total abandonment. And again, many, many indicated from very young that they thought it was something they did. And if you look at a preschooler's mind, it's you know, sometimes they think, well, maybe because I didn't kiss my parent, or maybe because I didn't bring something home, or they mm-hmm. think I did something badly in school. These very simple things that as adults we never consider at all as being a cause, that's the way preschoolers often think. And so you let that sort of feeling ongoing
right.
to the point
right.
that they consider that they could have done something to change this.
Well, I tell you, we're going to go to break and come back for our last segment, and I'd like to know more about this toolkit and maybe something called the Children's Bill of Rights or something of the incarcerated. We'll be right back.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Listen to the women's side of the fitness industry on Fitness RX Radio. If you're looking to stay healthy and look great, or are getting ready to compete athletically, this is the show for you. We'll look at competitions from the inside out, bring you fitness tips, nutrition to keep you on top of your game, and so much more. We want to hear from you, too, and we'll take your questions by phone or email. Tune in to Fitness RX Radio, airing every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time, on the Voice America Variety Channel. Look and feel your best.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your questions. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Ready to chat about your favorite soap operas? The Daytime Discussion is here with Dan J. Kroll and Soap Central Live. For the past 15 years, Dan has been dishing and discussing on SoapCentral.com. And now he's taking the talk to the airwaves of the Voice America Variety Channel. You'll go behind the scenes with the biggest stars of daytime, along with guest commentary from the Soap Central columnists. And we'll take your questions and comments during our live show. Soap Central Live, every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
Ask the experts. Call toll free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your questions. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Tuned in to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with your host, Sharon E. Davis. We know you have something to say, so participate in today's discussion by calling 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or send us an email to Sharon at safeplaceonrace.com. Now, back to the program.
Joining us, you know, our guests today are Dr. Jeanette Betancourt, who is Senior Vice President, Outreach and Educational Practices at Sesame Street Sesame Workshop, and Dr. Kirk E. Harris, who's a professor at the University of Wisconsin at Madison, and also as part of the School of Architecture and Urban Planning. Well, before we went on break here, we talked about the impact of trauma with these children, and really to call it that, and that the children of the incarcerated often feel that a grief so deep it's like a death to them, and the importance of community to support these children who are really the innocent and the invisible. Well, Kirk, did you have any other items that you wanted to add to this idea of trauma?
Yeah, I do. I do. One of the things that we can do in facilitating the mitigation of this trauma that we're talking about is if we can get the institutions in which the parents are incarcerated to recognize that these individuals are parents. And, you know, we've had some modeling, some very marginal efforts at supporting mothers' roles who are naturally seen as nurturers. And so, particularly as children are young, these institutions sometimes afford some marginal connectivity of the mother to their children. But for many, it's only marginal, and it's at best a kind of a temporary solution. And for fathers, there's very little effort to even recognize that nurturing and support role that they can play. So one of the things I would say in terms of practice and policy, if we can do a better job in facilitating those connections and those institutions begin to embrace and understand that they have parents in their midst, we can mitigate some of the social implications of children being traumatized and disconnected from their parents, which ultimately, by the way, is going to cost us a lot of money if we don't address it early. And so so expending a little bit of money now, keeping kids connected to their parents in healthy ways, actually avoids the expenditure of a lot of other resources later in terms of addressing the needs of children.
That's really an important point about the economics of this, and that's a whole other show as well. Jeanette, This is Sesame Street's Little Children, Big Challenges, and the subject, of course, is incarceration. For what age group are these toolkits designed to support and to wrap around them this loving regard? Mm-hmm. And are there any particular targeted areas, states that Sesame Street Workshop that is concentrating on?
Mm-hmm. Well, in terms of really the age range, we have stated and did our research actually between children 3 and 8 years of age. However, what we found is that in this kind of topic, and particularly because there's such scarcity of resources, mm-hmm. many of these young children had siblings who were older. And in fact, we found from our research as we were developing the resources that the entire family or set of caregivers and siblings, older siblings, 10, 12, actually were equally engaged only mm-hmm. because what we often forget is that it's generally not just one child impacted, but siblings. It's a set of children. Mm-hmm. And you often find that older children are sometimes taking on the burden that may have mm-hmm. been more of a parent role. So right. what we're finding is this ability of using Sesame Street as a way to open up the discussion, because these materials are talking from a child's point of view, and because many adults and children are connected to Sesame Street in very positive and warm ways, it just allows the discussion to happen in a much easier and simpler manner. So although the age range is 3 to 8, what we say is really this is a family toolkit. Mm-hmm. These are family mm-hmm. resources. And again, available at sesamestreet.org/incarceration. And I know they're also available on your site.
Well, thank you so much. And now, are there any targeted areas in terms of geography?
Yes. What we're doing in terms of geography is really working back to the discussion that Kirk was having. Can mm-hmm. we work in certain states that are really working very hard to align systems that are looking at the issue of incarceration? Mm-hmm. And so many of those states, such as New York, the District of Washington, D.C., are engaging in these efforts. So that's one. But I think what I hope comes across is that all these resources are available for everyone free of charge and easily, regardless of where we're working directly in the state with this sort of more higher level coalitions. But it's available for everyone. And one of the things I think we didn't talk about as much is the caregivers, mm-hmm. the ones who are doing the caring. And our key message to them is, please, you need to take care of yourself before you take care of others.
Oh, my gosh.
So hopefully these resources can help in that.
Well, you know, I went on, of course, your website, and you have such an abundance of resources in addition to the toolkit. There's so Right. many organizations that are participating in it. Actually, I was surprised. I really was. On second thought, why should I be surprised? Because this mass incarceration is really a national tragedy, I feel. And, you know, one of the resources you had, I believe this was from your site, was Children of the Incarcerated with Incarcerated Parents, a Bill of Rights. And I just wanted to say a couple of the things that are on here for you to react to before our show ends. And the number one thing it says for the Children's Bill of Rights is that I have the right to be kept safe and informed at the time of my parents' arrests. Number two, I have the mm-hmm. right to be heard when decisions are made about me. I have mm-hmm. the right to be considered when decisions are made about my parents. I have the right to be well cared for in my parents' absence. I have the right to speak with, see, and touch my parents. This is just extraordinary. Any comments on that?
My only comment is amen.
Yeah.
And again, that's exactly what you picked up, Sharon. We didn't develop these resources on our own, but in fact, organizations, and one of the organizations that has exactly focused on the Children's Bill of Rights, it was developed by them. And mm-hmm. we linked that resource to ours because we want to continue to provide this venue of connecting all those organizations that are addressing this topic and, again, aligning the resources so it's in one place.
That is just extraordinary, and I guess I'm kind of over the top here because when I read these, it just sounds so true that it's a tragedy if we don't address the emotions of these children who are the innocent. And it goes on to say something like, I have the right not to be judged, blamed, or labeled because of my parents' incarceration. And I have the right to a lifelong relationship with my parents. I think you, both of you, spoke of that earlier.
Right. And I do think that the reality here is that one, we've got this, for me, there's three takeaways for this. One is that we have to recognize that looking from the parents, from the child's point of view, their parents are important to them no matter what they've done. Okay?
Right.
So that's one.
Yeah.
And we can't look at that. Again, we have to look at that from the child's perspective, not from our own adult perspective. Two, because for us, the fathers, families, health communities, often what we see is that people say, why do you want that low-income, unemployed, formerly incarcerated individual connected with his kid? Well, because the kid wants to be connected with his father, and the father wants to be connected. That's why.
But, you got 10 seconds.
And then the other piece is that we have to get our institutions to recognize and support and our communities to recognize and support these children.
Dr. Jeanette Battencourt and Dr. Kirk Harris, thank you so much for the work that you do. And please go to our website and find out more, and the Sesame Workshop website as well. Thank you for joining us, you two.
Thank you, Sharon.
Thank you, Jeanette. Thank you so much, Sharon. Thank you, Kirk.
Thank you.
Thank you again for listening today. Please join host Sharon E. Davis for another edition of A Safe Place to Talk About Race next Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll talk then.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.